things about rest. So, you know, we can start in a good way. So I Googled Proverbs on rest, and I want to show you two of the first ones that popped up. This is the first one. No rest is worth anything except the rest that is earned. And then the second one. How beautiful it is to do nothing and then rest afterwards. I thought, wow, you really can get more polar opposites than these two proverbs and actually the pictures, too, that were really kind of worlds apart. And maybe some of us relate more to one than to the other, or probably a lot of us think, well, they're kind of extremes and we're, you know, it's kind of a spectrum and we're somewhere in the middle. Actually, I always do that. Whenever I think of a spectrum, you know, that's an extreme, that's an extreme. I'm kind of in the middle, you know, to do that. So if we do that here, we might think, well, those that do a lot more work than us, they are probably, you know, don't have a sense of balance. They're probably workaholics. They probably, you know, they're overdoing it. And those who do a lot less than us, a lot less work than us, or take a lot more rest than us, well, they could be really lucky that they're able to do that, or they could be very unlucky if they're not able to work, but probably they're lazy, not pulling their weight, you know, whereas we're kind of in the middle. Or maybe you don't feel that. Maybe you feel that you would like to do more rest, you would like to have more rest, or you would like to do more work, but you're stuck with circumstances. Circumstances dictate how you're able to rest, and so you have no choice. Well, I'd like to challenge all of us today that maybe we're not perfectly in the middle. Maybe we don't have the balance right. And maybe also we have more choice in how much we rest than we think we do. So I'd like to put that challenge out there. I'll confess, though, in this particular spectrum, I am not somewhere in the middle. I am very definitely at one end of the spectrum. I'm a rest must be earned kind of a person, which is why I'm great on the farm. And if you came out last week and tried to get some ice cream before you'd pulled some weeds, you'd have found out that I'm a rest must be earned kind of person. I'm a rest is what you do when all the work is done. The only problem, of course, is that all the work is never done. In fact, I told my husband and then later my teenage son that I was going to do a message on rest, and they both laughed at me and said, "What do you know about it?" So it's true. I rarely rest unless I have to, because I physically can't keep my eyes open, or I'm sick, or you know, I have visitors, or you know, something makes me stop. But I do realize that that's not healthy. And so when I was asked if I wanted to talk about rest, I thought, well, it would actually be good to spend some time thinking about not just why I struggle with rest, but why so many people I know, particularly in this part of the country, really struggle to rest. And so that's the perspective I'm mainly going to be taking this morning. I'm going to kind of be looking at it from that angle. So if you're one of those people that like to do nothing all day and then rest, there might be a few places in the message today when I ask you to cover your ears and not listen. Hopefully you've been challenged by some of the other weeks on work. I hope to say something that's helpful to everyone, but I really do want to focus on those of us who struggle to rest. Maybe think that we can't rest, maybe think that we can't get enough rest, or even at some level, maybe don't even want to rest. And I think it'd be good to unpack why that is. So I think one of the reasons some of us struggle to rest is that we have some erroneous views of what rest actually is. So I thought it might be useful to first look at what rest is not. I think we have a slide for that. So first, rest is not idleness or distraction. So unemployment is not restful, right? If you've been unemployed or you are unemployed, that's actually very stressful. It's not restful. Or mandatory rest breaks are not restful. I remember having a job where every few hours I had to stop and sit in the break room for 20 minutes, and I hated it because I just wanted to get the job done and go home. It was a waste of time. It was boring. Obviously, there could be reasons why you need to take breaks for health and safety reasons, but just being obliged or forced to stop what you're doing is not the same as rest. Neither is rest distraction. Often when I have a big task that needs doing, I start to get a little distracted. Actually, you know, kind of find 101 other things that need doing first. And a lot of that can be very productive. Someone's coined the phrase productive procrastination. You can get a lot done when you're trying to avoid that one thing that you really need to do, right? But to be honest, not all of my distractions are necessarily productive. There are suddenly videos on YouTube or on Facebook that seem much more compelling when I'm trying not to do the thing that I need to do. But that's not restful, right? In fact, I'm probably getting more and more stressed about the fact that I still haven't prepared my message on rest, for example. So idleness and rest are idleness and distraction are not rest. Secondly, entertainment or play are not the same thing as rest. How many times have you had a weekend where you've rushed from activity to activity and you get back to work on Monday and you're exhausted? Or how many times have you had a vacation and then said, oh, now I need a vacation to recover from the vacation, right? I think entertainment, playing, socializing, games, those are great activities. They're a way of celebrating life, a way of bringing people together, a way of expressing creativity, a way of imitating God's playfulness that I think we see in creation. I think play is hugely important. I think it's hugely undervalued, and particularly, I would say, by certain kinds of people who would call themselves Christians, I think we undervalue play. In fact, during our last series, Mystery, Meaning, and the Quest for God, we talked about perichoresis, this idea of the Trinity being almost a dance that we're invited into. And I think dance, I think creativity, I think play is at the very heart of God. I think it's really important. Play tells us that life is not all about work. It's not all about achieving things and accomplishing things. It's also about celebrating life. But play is not the same as rest. I think rest often includes aspects of play, but play can be exhausting. So play is not the same as rest. Third, rest is not recharge. It's not simply a way to recharge to get back to work. Obviously, we do need to take time to rest and get our strength back for the work that we have to do. But it's not as though work is the real thing and rest is a means by which we can do more work. We're not batteries, right? Batteries are only good if they power things, and once they're flat, they're worthless. You can throw them away or recharge them so that they have value again. We're not batteries. We have intrinsic worth. We matter for who we are, not just what we do. And I think if we have an attitude that work is a real thing and rest is a means to work, we're likely to end up with a very utilitarian approach to life. We're likely to value people for how useful we judge them to be. We're likely to judge ourselves in the same way. So we feel good about ourselves when we're very productive and when we're very busy, and we feel not so easy about ourselves when people aren't asking for our attention or aren't needing us. We kind of worry that maybe we're not so valuable after all. And I think we live in a society like that. I think we live in a society where people are always complaining that they're so busy, they have so much to do, but they're not really complaining, right? It's almost bragging about it. It's almost a badge of honor if you're really busy, because that must mean you're really important. Because we think the more you do, the more important you are, the more significant you are, because life is all about work. It's all about achieving things. It's all about getting things done and accomplishing things. But we know, really, that's not a healthy view of life at any level. That's not a healthy view physically, emotionally, or spiritually. And we've talked about this at Cedar Ridge before, that life isn't all about working to get ahead, to stay ahead, to be important, that's not where our value comes from. There are lots of passages in the Bible on this, about the futility of just focusing on work and accumulation and on the stuff. We'll just read one of those. Unless the Lord builds the house, the builders labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the guards stand watch in vain. In vain you rise early and stay up late, toiling for food to eat, for he grants sleep to those he loves. So work is not the be-all and end-all of life, and rest is not just a means to get back to do some more work. Fourthly, rest is not just something on our to-do list. It's not something we work at. It's not a way that we work. I don't think it's all about scheduling and prioritizing or even being disciplined. Now, I think some of us do need to do a better job of establishing boundaries and making sure we make time to rest. But I don't think if we approach rest in that way as something that we have to do, as an obligation, I think we kind of miss the point. It can become a burden. We see that happen in Scripture over the Sabbath. God gave people the gift of rest, a day of rest, and it became an obligation. It became a day of rules and prohibitions, and something that was a burden rather than something that was to be enjoyed and cherished. Fifth, rest is not me time. Me time is very popular right now, particularly among women, doubly so among mothers. There are lots of websites and books and videos and everything on me time, on why you're entitled to me time, why you need me time, how you might use me time, et cetera, et cetera. And I do think, you know, that obviously that we do have a responsibility to take care of ourselves. Our bodies are entrusted to us. We do have a responsibility to make sure that we take care of ourselves and, you know, make that space for ourselves. And there is something very healthy about pushing back on the frenetic pace of life and really taking that time to focus on our own well-being. So, I'm not knocking that in any way. And I think all of us, however introverted or extroverted we are, need time away from everybody else just to have quiet, you know, for our own sanity. But at the same time, I do think that this modern American concept of me time can be very selfish. It can be about pitting my interests against the interests of others. Again, I did a Google search for me time and pulled up a couple of quotes that came up very quickly. I need some me time, not some you, not some we, but some me time. And another one. Sometimes I need a complete day to myself. No kids, no husband, just uninterrupted me time to do whatever I want. Sounds good. I'd kind of like that. But at the same time, I just can't see Jesus saying that. You know, really? Well, not the husband and kids, but anyway, you know what I mean. And in fact, we see in Mark 6, Jesus wanting some time to rest, wanting time to rest for himself, presumably, definitely wanting it for his disciples. And let's see what happens there. The apostles then rendezvoused with Jesus and reported on all that they had done and taught. Jesus said, "Come off by yourselves. Let's take a break and get a little rest." For there was constant coming and going. They didn't even have time to eat. So they got in the boat and went off to a remote place by themselves. Someone saw them going, and the word got around. From the surrounding towns, people went out on foot, running, and got there ahead of them. When Jesus arrived, he saw this huge crowd. At the sight of them, his heart broke. Like sheep with no shepherd, they were. He went right to work teaching them. So here we see Jesus recognizing the need for rest and trying to get away to rest, but yet he was still moved by the needs of others. He didn't demand, no, this is me time. And finally, rest is not an excuse for sloth. What do I mean by that? Well, he's a sloth. I love sloths. Sloths are great. I think they're really cool animals. They are kind of lazy, though. They sleep 15 to 18 hours a day. They only move when necessary. Their absolute top speed is around about 250 yards an hour, though, of course, they could not keep up that breakneck speed for that long. They have muscle mass a quarter of any other animal their size, and it can take them up to 50 days or more to digest a single meal. So these are... But they look so happy. They also kind of have this smile on their face. So I think sloths are great, but outside of thinking of the animal sloth, we really don't use the word sloth very much anymore. In fact, I think the only context we think of it, or I think of it, is as one of the seven deadly sins. I think it's my favorite of the seven deadly sins, because it's the one on the list, perhaps the only one on the list, where I think, nah, I think I'm good. I'm kind of busy and productive. I'm okay on that one. Or I used to think that until I read a book where this writer reinterpreted what sloth means. Don't you hate it when people do that? David did that a few weeks ago, actually, didn't he, with the Ten Commandments. I thought I was good on a couple of those. I was like, no, I'm okay. And then, you know, he reinterpreted them in the context of work, and you're like, great, I'm guilty of all of them. Thanks very much. So this writer did this for me with the word sloth and said, it's not just about what we think of as typical laziness. It can also be that emotional detachment or disengagement. You know, those situations where you're very involved, you're very engaged, and for whatever reason, you get to that point where you're like, oh, I don't care. Do what you want. It's fine. Whatever. And I do that sometimes. You know, and he was saying that that's a form of sloth, a form of laziness, that stepping back can be an unhealthy way, a lazy way of dealing with dissatisfaction and can actually take us away from healthy engagement in work and rest and working through things, just that kind of whatever. That's not restful. It's actually an unhealthy form. All right, so I think that's enough about what rest isn't. So what is rest? Well, let's look at the first recorded of rest that we read in Scripture, in the Genesis story, at the end of the creation story. God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. And there was evening and there was morning, the sixth day. Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. I like this story. God created this amazingly complex, huge universe, including our own planet that's amazingly abundant and teeming with life. And then he rested. He declared it was very good, and he rested. I think it's a hard verse to read, or a passage to read, though, and not anthropomorphize God. You know, I always kind of see God going, whew, kind of, you know, sitting back, slouching on the throne, kind of, you know, whew, all the creation's done. And of course, that's silly. God's not a man. He wasn't tired after creation. And yet, there is this imagery of God taking time, whatever that means for a God that is outside of time, but stopping in some way to look and enjoy creation, enjoy what he'd made, enjoy life. Just in case we need a reminder of why God might want to have done that, I have a little clip about creation. Can see why God might say it was very good. So I think the first way that we can think about rest is as making space to be aware of the beauty around us, the beauty in creation, the beauty in life, and the wonder in life itself. I think making space, taking time to become aware of God in life around us. And in a sense, I think God is the epitome of rest. God is perfect. He's complete. There's nothing to be achieved or worked at to fulfill God. There's just God's glorious existence to be enjoyed, God's character to be loved and to be worshipped. So I think rest is firstly making space to be aware of God, who is in some ways rest. Second, rest is allowing God to work in us. While I think God is in some ways the epitome of rest, God is not inactive. God is very active in creation, including in us. We read that in a number of places in scripture, and we'll just look at a couple of those. Firstly, from Philippians, there has never been the slightest doubt in my mind that the God who started this great work in you would keep at it and bring it to a flourishing finish on the very day Christ Jesus appears. So God continues to be at work in us and is bringing that to a conclusion. In the next verse, similarly, for we are God's handiwork, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to do. So God is working in us, but he's also prepared good works for us to do. And this idea of being created to do good works can be, and for me has been, actually a huge impediment to resting. I kind of grew up believing, I don't think I was taught this, but somehow I absorbed, that it was my responsibility, at least in part, to save people, to bring them into a relationship with God, that was kind of my job. And that obviously is a ridiculously huge and heavy responsibility to try and take on. And although I don't believe that anymore, I haven't for a long time, I still say things like, well, we are God's hands and feet. In fact, I think we sing a song about God has no hands but our hands or something like that. And of course, in a way, that's absolutely true, right? God has invited us to partner in God's work of healing and restoration. But I think it's also open to being very badly misinterpreted, and I think I've badly misinterpreted it at times in my life. I don't know if you've seen Schindler's List. Has anyone seen that movie? Does anyone remember that movie? It actually came out 23 years ago. I couldn't believe that when I looked it up. So obviously, I was a very young child when I watched it. But I remember that movie very clearly. It's a very powerful movie, has a very powerful ending. For those who haven't seen it or don't remember, it ends with the end of World War II, and Oskar Schindler, who is the hero of the movie, has rescued, he's a businessman, he's quite wealthy, he's got lots of factories, and he's managed to buy or secure as workers over 1,100 Jewish people and save them from certain death in the camps. And it gets to the end of the movie, and it's the end of the war, and he realizes, it is the end of the movie, he doesn't realize it's the end of the movie, it kind of sounded funny, but it's the end of the war, and he realizes that he could have saved more. He looks and he has a car, and he says, well, I could have sold that car and rescued another 8 or 10 people, had them as workers in my factory, and he has this stupid gold pin, it's meaningless, but he could have traded that and maybe rescued another person, and so he's overwhelmed with regret and guilt for these wasted opportunities, even though he's rescued, all these Jewish people. And I watched that and I thought, how can that not be me at the end of my life? And that scene haunted me for years. And I just thought, how can I not get to the end of my life and regret all of the wasted opportunities? You know, I was raised on verses about, you know, fighting the good fight and running the race and storing up treasures in heaven and working out my salvation and being ready in season and out of season. And all these verses that are very active, us doing things and making the most of every opportunity. And don't get me wrong, I always believe that I was saved through grace and that God loved me no matter what I did. And yet I felt that we have this responsibility. We have to go out and do all these things. And how can I not get to the end of my life and think, however good I've been, however hard I've worked, how can I not get to the end of my life and think there are opportunities that I've wasted? I kind of thought that the highest aim for a follower of Jesus was to be welcomed into heaven with the words, well done, good and faithful servant. But however good, however faithful, there would be opportunities that I'd not taken advantage of, those good works that I'd not walked in. Okay, so this is one of those places where if you're a rest, a do-nothing all day and then rest kind of person, you can kind of cover your ears and go to your happy place. But for the rest of us, those of us that do struggle with resting, I want to say that I think one of the most beautiful and liberating aspects of the gospel is that God has done it all and that God doesn't need us. God loves us. God loves us incredibly more than we can imagine. But God doesn't need me to go and fix the world. And God doesn't need you to go and fix the world. God is actually quite capable of fixing things directly. Again, I know that God has invited us to partner. I'm not denying any of that. But that responsibility, that feeling that we have to go and do everything, it's just, you know, God has done it all. God invites us to join with him. But it's not that obligation, that responsibility. And obviously, it's pure conjecture here, but I don't think God has ever welcomed people into heaven with the words, well done, good and faithful servant, because I don't think God sees us as servants. I think God sees us as beloved children. So I don't think it's about what we do, what we achieve. I think God is much more interested in who we are and who we're becoming. God's prepared good works for us to do, not because there's stuff that needs doing and God needs us to do it. But because we are God's handiwork, because God is working in us and through us, because good works as well as rest are ways in which God works in us, making us the people that we're meant to be. I think through work and rest, like day and night or sun and rain, God makes us into the people that we were made to be. The people that we already are, the people with the potential that we already have. I was thinking it's kind of like a child of an artist who copies the way her mother or father draws and paints and puts in the work, does the practicing, but yet becomes an artist because it's already in her DNA, because she already is her mother's daughter mother's daughter or her father's daughter. So rest, then, I think, is about stopping thinking that we are doing things for God, we are working for God, and instead to allow God to work in us, both through work and through rest. Third, rest is surrendering to God. Probably my very favorite verse in the Bible is in Psalm 46, a very well-known verse. Be still and know that I am God. The psalm is thought to have been written with a specific story in mind. That's the Assyrian assault on the land of Judah. So Sennacherib, who was the king of Assyria, went in and he besieged all the fortified cities in Judah. And King Hezekiah, the king of Judah, he ran around constructing walls and protecting the water sources and doing everything he could to keep people safe. But Sennacherib sent messages to King Hezekiah and to all the people and said, what do you think you're doing? Are you crazy? I have besieged loads and loads of cities. They have all fallen. You don't stand a chance. You're wasting your time. You are going to fall to me. And don't think that your God can save you. Other people thought that their gods would save them, and nobody has stood up for me. And it's in the seemingly hopeless situation that the psalmist has God say, be still and know that I am God. And the word translated be still, rapha, means relax, let go. And that point of letting go is to see that God is God. And I think resting, relaxing, letting go can be a physical and an emotional statement, an acknowledgement that we're not God, that we can stop and the world will go on, that we can stop and rest, and the sky won't fall in. We're not God. I think it's also an acknowledgement that we ourselves are dependent on God. We need to rest. We're created to need rest. Apparently, I heard this on a TED talk, so I'm going to assume it's true, but you can correct me afterwards if I'm wrong. We need sleep because the lymphatic system uses cerebral spinal fluid to flush away toxic byproducts that accumulate between the cells, and the system is much more active when we sleep. So sleep is a physical necessity for us. Sleep deprivation leads to problems with learning, memory, mood, reaction time. Chronic sleep deprivation is linked to inflammation, hallucinations, high blood pressure, diabetes, obesity, and a whole bunch of other stuff. And yet, here in America, 30% of adults and 66% of adolescents are regularly sleep deprived, although my son is not one of those that's regularly sleep deprived. But somewhere out there, two-thirds of adolescents are regularly sleep-deprived. I think many of us are in denial about our need for sleep. Obviously, sleep is not synonymous with rest, but they're closely linked. And I think many of us are actually in denial about our need for rest. It's not just a physical need or even an emotional need. I think it's a spiritual need. Psalm 62 is a psalm that's attributed to David, which may mean that David wrote it, or maybe more likely that someone was thinking about a story of David as he or she wrote the psalm. And it seems that for much of David's life, he was on the run. People were out to kill him. I think it was something in his character just seemed to bring that out in people. He was always running away. People were always pursuing him and chasing him and trying to kill him. And that's the context in which the psalmist has David say this. Truly, my soul finds rest in God. My salvation comes from him. Truly, he is my rock and my salvation. He is my fortress. I will never be shaken. And then he switches his focus to talking about the attack. How long will you assault me? Would all of you throw me down this leaning wall, this tottering fence? Surely they intend to topple me from this my lofty place. They take delight in lies. With their mouths they bless, but in their hearts they curse. Yes, my soul, find rest in God. My hope comes from God. I think it's great juxtapositioning here. There's a midst of an attack. People are out to get him. They're out to kill him. They're out to bring him down. And yet he says, my soul finds rest in God. And I think from a spiritual perspective, rest comes from that confidence in God. It comes from, it's that peace that we can have even in the midst of life's turmoils, of seeming attacks, of pain, of confusion, of busyness. In the midst of all that, we can have rest through confidence in God, trusting in God. It's a surrendering to God, our own delusions of being in control of everything in our life, and a trusting in God's love for us. Of course, that doesn't mean that God's going to work everything out the way we would like him to. I mean, that'd be great, but that's not true of life. But it does mean trusting that God will be with us, upholding us and loving us through all that life brings. Fourthly, rest is a gift. In the Exodus story, you may remember that the people of Israel were slaves in Egypt for hundreds of years, and finally they move out, they escape into the wilderness, where God gives them 10 rules to live by, one of which is take a day off. And we read that in Exodus 20. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. So after all these years of slavery, of nothing but endless, arduous work, God gives the people the gift of time off. God took time out, so to speak, whatever that means, to enjoy creation, to enjoy life, and so should we. And this rest is for everyone. It was for the kids, it was for the foreigners, it was for the slaves, it was for the animals. We have a responsibility to rest and a responsibility to make sure that other people can rest too. And of course, the Sabbath became a very big deal for the Jewish people. And then we read in the gospel how Jesus kind of provocatively broke the rules of the Sabbath. He healed on the Sabbath, which was considered work, and he defended his disciples for plucking grain on the Sabbath on the grounds that the Sabbath is made for man, not man for the Sabbath. We're not doing God a favor by resting. God has given us the gift of rest. But some of us refuse that gift. Some of us say, no, we're too busy. We've got too much to do. We can't rest. We don't have enough time. There's fascinating research that's been done at Princeton University on the psychology of scarcity. And as part of this research, Princeton students have been put into simulations and game environments where they've been either designated rich or poor. And they can be rich in terms of points or hypothetical money or in terms of time. And they have more time to do tasks or to answer questions and so on. And then there's the poor group that has less of these points or money or time. And the experiments that they've done have shown over and over again that people who are poor, just in terms of having less of these points or less of this time, make worse decisions. The reasons behind it, they're multiple. They're really interesting, actually. You can go home later and Google, not now on your phones, but later and Google the psychology of scarcity. Is really interesting. But basically, our psychology changes for the worst in an environment of scarcity. We become more competitive, but we become more easily distracted, more easily tempted, and less rational when we believe that we don't have enough. And rest at some level, I think, is a declaration that we have enough. God says you have 6 days to labor, and that's enough. In the same story, the Exodus story, we read about God giving manna to people, so that strange kind of wafer thing, that food that appeared on the ground in the morning and that could be baked into bread. And people were told to gather just enough for that day. And if they gathered more and they kept it overnight, in the morning it would all be stinky and full of maggots and gross. But on the sixth day, they were told to gather twice as much and to save half of it for the Sabbath, and that stayed fresh. So the Sabbath seems to be wrapped up in this idea of God gives us enough. And I think rest is really acknowledging that we have enough. God gives us enough. We don't need to work endlessly, relentlessly, to always get ahead and stay ahead. We can rest confidently in God and enjoy the gift of rest. And finally, rest is found in Jesus. Perhaps the most famous verse on rest is in Matthew 11, where Jesus addresses the crowds with these words. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. I know we read these verses a lot at Cedar Ridge. I think it might be in our bylaws that we have to read them at least every other week. So I know we read them a lot, and I think it's easy just to kind of skip over them and not really let them sink in. But I think these verses really sum up what rest is all about. Jesus addresses these words to people who are weary and burdened. I think all of us can associate with being weary and burdened, at least it's sometimes and in some ways. There's a heaviness to life sometimes. There's a heaviness to work. There's a heaviness to getting through all that we need to do. There's a heaviness that comes from anxiety, worrying about, do we have enough? Do we have enough money? Do we have enough time? Does our work, whether that's paid or unwork, does that give us enough? Does it give us enough significance? Does it give us enough identity and acknowledgement and recognition? Are we doing enough to meet expectations? Are we doing enough to feel that we're using our lives well and that we're a success? There can be a lot of anxiety that comes in about that. And into this reality, Jesus says, come to me and I will give you rest. I have a friend who struggles with panic attacks. And it's as though all of the worries and the anxieties and all the things that's, you know, kind of stretching out into the future all converge at once. And she just, you know, it's completely overwhelming. Everything is kind of right there in front. And she has to, you know, be reminded to slow down, to breathe deeply, and to focus on now, and to focus on one good thing now. And I wonder if there isn't some of that in what Jesus is saying. Look at me. Don't be anxious about all that could happen and is maybe will happen. Don't be overwhelmed by all that. Look at me. Come to me. Focus on me. Breathe deeply and rest. And this rest is not idleness. It's not distraction. It's not an obligation. It is a gift. It's surrendering to the yoke that Jesus gives. Now, the word yoke, obviously, is often associated with kind of a yoke of oppression or a way of being forced into labor, forced service. But Jesus kind of turns that imagery around and says, this is a light yoke. This is an easy yoke. This is a well-fitting yoke. This is not about forced labor. This is about walking alongside Jesus and having Jesus support our load, working together. It's a new way of working, a new way of thinking about work and of thinking about living. It's a way that is restful. There are a number of ways that we can practice rest. During the last series, we were encouraged to take just 5 minutes at the beginning of each day and think about God, focus on God, and surrender the day to God, and be aware of God's presence. And bring that rest, that feeling of rest, into the busyness of our day. In other talks that we've had in the past, there have been suggestions about setting reminders for ourselves, either an hourly chime on our phone or on our watch, to remember that God is with us and to take that moment to stop and remember God's presence. Or as we do an activity that we do regularly through the day, using that as a way of remembering. Or as we go into a certain room in the house, using that as a reminder that God is with us, and to find rest in the busyness of our day. But right now, I think all of those are really helpful ways, but right now I want us not to focus on what we can do to rest, but rather I want to encourage us to take some time now to really be still, to let go, to relax, and to know that God is God. I'm going to read these verses again slowly, and I'd encourage you just to let the words sink in. Just to maybe close your eyes comfortably and to take some time to still your thoughts and to let go of that anxiety and to rest in Jesus and to enjoy the rest that God gives. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. I'm going to take communion in a few minutes. Communion.